Video. It's the only way to get what you want to watch when you want to watch it.
Hello, my name is Justin McClune. I'm here today with
Mark Hansen.
And you're listening to the Bay Street Video Podcast. We go through all the notable Blu-rays and DVDs. Man, you came in strong. You're like, Mark Hansen.
I'm excited about this group.
Because we were very casually talking before this. But then, when, you know, you let off the chains. Mark is like,
That's the sign of a great podcast co-host. You just turn it on, turn it off.
Yeah. When this podcast ends, I've sometimes left accidentally the end of a podcast where you hear me talking like this, but then when the podcast ends, I'm like, all right, it's time to turn off. All right, let's go. You gotta, the energy goes back to your everyday state. So
I conserve my energy just for this podcast.
Yeah, Mark Hansen, I feel like people that know you wouldn't describe you as a energetic individual.
I guess, yeah, I guess it
a positive
depends.
Individual? A
positive, yeah.
Yeah, but usually when you talk, you're like, hey, how's it going?
Yeah, that's cool. I try and keep it chill.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Try and keep it chill.
But then when you come to the podcast, you're like, yeah! Who says some people have said your indecipherable Canadian accent, which I don't hear.
My indecipherable Canadian Valley Girl accent? That's what I've been, which I'm cool with. I kind of like that. I take that as a point of pride.
Yeah, I guess because you have vocal fry or?
Well, it's because I keep doing the, you know.
Is that what it is?
What? Or
oh, yeah.
You know,
the classic,
I don't know.
The
or what do I say?
Mark.
Like,
what?
I don't know. I don't know. I do.
All right. So we start off with, you love Chucky, right?
I love, who doesn't love Chucky? And we're actually missing one of them here because they sold out.
Wow.
Only because I brought fewer of them in.
Scream Factory.
Yeah.
Listen, they want to keep the doors open. It's still going through their 4K catalog.
You know, instead of putting together a gigantic Chucky box set of every single Chucky
movie. They've
never
done a Chucky box set.
No, I know.
No.
But they, you know, they could.
They've
maybe.
Been anti-box set since the other companies are getting into box sets.
You know, but I have that, we have that beautiful Friday the 13th box set on our shelf.
Never again.
And I'm like, I would 100% buy all these Chucky releases if they were just in one box set together.
I like all the Chucky movies.
I love them all. Yeah.
Now, you know what? I don't like one of the one we're about to talk about now.
No?
No, it's not the one that most people don't like when it came out and then they've come around on. But first, we have Bride of Chucky.
Yes.
You know what? This one, maybe this too, I don't like. It's okay. I was never a huge fan.
I like it.
This one had like, people are like, Chucky's back when it came out.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? I think I expected a little bit more from Mr. Ronnie Yu. Hong Kong director.
Huge douchebag, too.
Journeyman. Oh, really?
Terrible, terrible person.
Where'd you hear this?
Well,
give me the goss.
A lot of the female cast members of both of this and Freddy vs. Jason don't have a lot of nice things to say.
No.
About him.
Do they say about that here?
Apparently, he's very pushy with getting women to take their clothes off for the
cameras. Ugh, gross.
So, I don't know.
Wait, where'd you hear the story?
You can read it on the, there's, I think it was from Freddy vs. Jason, I want to say Catherine Isabel, who's in that movie, had some not so great stories from
I wonder if they discuss
that,
it in
and
that
And I believe
big
there was something to do with this movie, too.
Oral
I don't
history
know about his non-Hollywood stuff.
Of
but,
Freddy vs. Jason, or like the Friday the 13th
movies? I'm not sure. I just remember, I didn't know about this until recently. I remember rewatching Freddy vs. Jason several years ago and just looking through the trivia, and there was all these things about
it. Oh, it's all in the IMDb trivia, too.
Yeah, so again,
ugh,
I guess
gross.
Take that with a grain of salt, but I mean,
how could the director of Formula 51 done this to me?
Formula 51, wow. But having said that, I love Bride of Chucky. And it is probably, it's the most popular of these four.
The funny thing about Ronnie Yu is that like he was always known as like, he's the grand visual stylist.
Yeah.
Because he did Bride with White Hair.
Yep.
Warriors of Virtue.
Mm-hmm.
But also just Hong Kong trash. Like he's kind of a journeyman.
Yeah, totally.
I'm going to be honest. I don't even like Bride with White Hair that much.
Okay.
I find it kind of dope. Do I own it on Blu-ray? Of course
Hell yeah,
I do.
You do.
That's old Justin. New Justin. Like, no, thank you.
You're a little choosier.
They put out The Postman Strikes Back, a Ronnie Yu film. And
yes.
I'm like, no, thank you. Like that was a Fox or whatever, you know, Hong Kong release.
Yeah, that's
not
coming
good.
In here soon, the North American release.
We'll probably talk about it when it comes.
We will.
But
we
I
will.
Ain't buying it. So, yeah, this is the same thing that's been on all the other releases. But
well,
new
Show Factory hasn't
4K
put
Master.
This out before.
Oh, they haven't?
No. So the only Chucky movie they put out before the 4Ks was the first one. And then they did 1, 2, and 3 as individual 4Ks. And now they're doing all these. These just had standard Blu-ray releases before. Bride of Chucky, I mean, this is a long time coming. I mean, you're lukewarm on it, but I have a soft spot for this. And it's obviously the one that introduced Jennifer Tilly into the series, who is awesome.
I thought Seed of Chucky is the one that introduced Jennifer Tilly, the actress, into
it
the
did.
Series.
And for my money, Seed of Chucky is actually my favorite one.
Some people of all of them. Could argue, doesn't really work as a horror film, but it's so farcical.
It's very meta, very farcical, and maybe that's just why I love it. I feel like
it kind of killed the Chucky franchise.
It did a little bit. You know, it takes the comedic elements of Bride of Chucky and pushes it even further where I really like it.
This is a really funny poster.
I love Jennifer Tilly.
Chucky, Tiffany, Jennifer Tilly, Red Man.
That was on all the posters when it was coming out, too. I remember that was the sell. And cameo from John Waters in this one.
That's right. I mean, it's basically a John Waters movie.
Yeah, he has a great death scene. And Billy Boyd.
You can relive the Billy Boyd renaissance.
Yeah. I always thought he was good as the voice. You know, these are some progressive movies, though, too. You know, Don Mancini, openly gay creator, a lot of queer content in these.
Now, I saw this at Fantasia Film Festival, the next one, Cult of Chucky. Is this the next one?
No, sorry. The next Curse of Chucky, which we sold out of only because I brought fewer copies in because I didn't think they were going to sell as much.
I love Curse of Chucky. That one rules.
Yeah.
That's like a return to Chucky, like being scary.
Yeah. Well, I remember
people.
At the time, I didn't see it right away because I was a little like, it's a DTV one. Maybe it's not going to be that good or whatever. Yeah. But I was really surprised. It has Fiona Dourif in it, Brad Dourif's daughter, who will also go on to be in Cult of Chucky, and I thought she was really good in it. I thought, you're right, it was scary. It brought back the horror element.
Even though I remember sitting there being like, man, Chucky doesn't shut up. He just talks and talks.
That's why
and
I kind of like
him.
I really like the fact that he doesn't shut up. He's just hilarious.
But like, even in the first one, like, he will not stop talking.
He won't, yeah. But I found the jokes, like the one-liners in Cult and Curse of Chucky are still pretty strong.
Yeah.
Like, I really like him.
So I didn't watch Cult of Chucky for the longest time. I don't know why, because I like Curse of Chucky so much.
Yeah.
And I rewatched it a couple years ago. I did not like it.
Okay.
Because it's such a bummer. It's it's no one wins at the end.
Yeah.
Chucky wins. We love Chucky.
Yeah. But that's the thing. I think I just love Chucky, so
and
I'm okay that he wins.
I love the ending, the post-credit sequence in Curse of Chucky, where he gets mailed and then he blows.
That's pretty good.
It was interesting that they continued with that, where the guy from the first three, but it didn't have anything to do with him.
Didn't integrate him
like
as
he was
well
there.
As they could
he had
have.
A Chucky head that he smoked up with.
Yeah, it was kind
but
of.
But then
a...
he just gets trapped at the end. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, no, they kind of maybe dropped the ball a bit on that aspect of it. Still had a ton of fun with these.
You like seeing Fiona try to do an imitation of her dad?
I do, yeah. And I also just like the cult of Chucky's in this last one. Like, all of the Chucky's.
Well, they just only really for like the last shot.
Only the last, I guess near the end. But I don't know. I expected this one not to be, because I'd heard a lot of that. I remember people telling me at the time this was terrible. So I went into this one with lowered expectations as well. Maybe that helped because I came away from it pleasantly surprised.
Wait, why do some of these have slipcovers?
They all have slipcovers.
Oh, you just took this one off?
I think the one for this copy, it was damaged. We got one that had
don't
like
even
a
look
really
nice.
Damaged.
Like, this is, well, you don't need a slipcover on this.
This is the typical Shout Factory slipcover thing. I mean, they're not special. They're not like Vinegar Syndrome slipcovers or anything. And a lot of them we get kind of come like
dented
bent
very easily.
Or
these
like
are the ones I would throw out when I would have them and be like, I don't need this.
And that's the thing. It's no different. It's not even like it's different art or anything.
Yeah.
It's just the original thing. But I'm glad that all of these Chucky movies are now out and kind of deluxe editions.
Yeah.
Although I just wish there was a box set.
I would buy the box set.
That's
instantly.
The thing. I haven't bought any of these Chucky 4Ks
yet. You know
yet.
What? I don't own any of them either.
Me
not
either.
Even the early Shout Factory.
I don't
releases.
Think I've ever owned a Child's Play.
And I love all the Chucky
me too,
movies.
Yeah.
But you know what? They could squeeze way more money out of you this way.
I know.
Way.
I remember when there was that Blu-ray set that I think Universal put out, the good guy one.
Oh, yeah. Kane was like a big good guy.
Yeah. And I was for half a second like, ooh, I could buy that, but it was so expensive.
It was just the movies
just
too. Not that
it
you
was just
ever
movies,
watch any special features, as we've
exactly.
already established.
Right. I don't do that.
No.
But with these, I would automatically buy this set if they were all together individually.
I have
it's
the Halloween
pricey,
one.
Though.
I have the. So there was another Friday the 13th set after the one that I bought, right? That was like the big box. Was there?
No.
No,
like
that's
the Shout Factory one?
Yeah, the Shout Factory
one.
No,
that's
one.
The only
that's the
one they've
okay.
done. There
that's
was one
the one
be-
like,
there was one before then.
They're like, it'll be gone soon. And they're like,
and it's still around.
We still have it. Like, do you
we
want it?
We still get copies, you know?
Have they gone into the 4K Friday the 13th? Which one have they done?
They haven't done 4Ks on Friday the 13th.
Boy, they're licking their lips
so
for that.
There is a 4K of the first Friday the 13th, but just the Paramount put out.
So speaking of 4Ks, we have a filmmaker I love. I love Jean Collin.
Okay.
I don't love him this much because...
I thought you were kind of lukewarm on him for some
no,
reason.
No, I love him. I did an episode on him for the Important Cinema Club and we watched a bunch of his movies and I was like, oh, these are amazing. I love all of these.
Mm-hmm.
And Indicator is doing, again,
like
these single
his whole
releases.
Filmography.
Yeah. Like, I guess it fell out of the hands of, what was it?
Well,
Temptation?
So Kino and Redemption
Kino.
Had
yes,
all
that
of those.
Redemption.
That Redemption label. Now Indicator seemingly is going to release them all. They already put out The Shiver of the Vampires and Two Orphan Vampires, and they've announced Fascination and Lips of Blood for a month or two from now. Here we've got The Rape of the Vampire and The Night of the Hunted. They seem to be releasing them all over the place. Like, there's really no, like, all
rhyme
over his
reason.
Filmography.
Yeah, I think maybe it's
know?
The most popular one. I think The Rape of the Vampire is one of the more popular ones.
Yeah.
None of the Hunted Hunter is the one that people always are like, ooh, sounds good. It's like, it's okay. I don't think it's one of his stronger ones.
Sounds very, I actually haven't seen either of these ones. Jean Rollin's a guy who I need to get into more, but I've liked what I've seen.
I love how
they're
saying strictly limited. Now,
yeah, I know.
6,000 copies is a lot though.
And these things, I don't know. Do people have, are people just not willing to spend as much money on Jean Rollin stuff? Because these releases aren't selling as well.
It doesn't have that.
As,
they're hoping it has that Jess Franco kind of like,
you know,
allure,
like
right?
They sell okay, but
did
even like Shiver the Vampire.
Kino's like, we can do Jess Franco too. Kino cult, right? You love Jess Franco.
Yeah, they're going hard on the Kino cult line.
Oh
now.
My God.
It's going to start up next month.
That's so funny that it took this long for Kino to be like, oh, we need a sub label.
The thing is, they put out cult shit all the time.
They put out cult shit all the time, but they're probably going to charge a little bit more.
I don't know. I think it's going to be the same,
you
actually.
Think?
I think it's the same
price. You
prices.
Think it'll have like boxes?
It just has a different slipcover that's not like Kino Lorber Studio Classics anymore.
Basically, it won't have the uniform Kino look,
exactly,
I bet.
Exactly, yeah.
So these special editions are filled with special features.
Yep.
Real ones or not? I don't know. I can't tell if that indicator box of...
it's hard to say.
That like, okay, original French commentary. Commentary of Jean Rollin from 2007. Tim Lucas doing one from 2023. Jean Rollin introduction. This is all like stuff from previous releases. Yeah, it looks pretty complete. Super 8 version of it. Carvel interview. Like everything you would want on these movies.
Yeah.
I would buy this if this was a box set.
So yeah,
I cannot justify.
I'm surprised you're not. So
45.
What is it?
New Justin. Yeah, right? Yeah.
So there's not. Is there a single Rollin film that you might buy with this?
Because I can never tell them apart. Okay. So I would have to go into my Letterboxd reviews.
Fair.
To be like, which is which? Which one did I really like? Because there's some that I like and some that I don't like that have like Vampire in the title. And it was from that event. But I've watched them recently. Like, I don't know.
That's fair. That's fair.
You've been saying, too, that, like, you can't sell these, right, that well
they're
here.
They're doing okay. But they're not flying out of here like you might expect a boutique release like
this,
too.
And when you get
a
Jess Franco one,
I mean,
those fly off
all
the shelf?
Depends on what it is.
Okay.
It really depends on what it is. If it's a Severin Jess Franco release, yeah, mostly.
Wait, which ones don't?
Although, I guess, who else is putting out Jess Franco?
Mostly Severin these days.
Mostly
they seem
Severin,
to have the like lockdown on that.
Yeah, Jess Franco stuff. I mean, it's cheaper, the Jess Franco stuff on Severin. This is like
$45
for a 4K.
I think what you're hitting is that just like these prices are too expensive for people.
They're a little expensive.
I say it every week.
But then people spend this much on like other 4Ks and stuff.
But
so,
they,
on like Criterion
they
4Ks,
know what it is.
So.
Yeah, but that's not a Criterion. Even though this is like looks as nice.
It looks as nice, yeah. I just thought Jean Rollin was a big enough name now.
No, I don't think he has the cult
eh?
That he has that Jess Franco does.
I agree with you, though. I get his stuff. Out of the few I've seen, I get them mixed up completely. I'm like, which one
Which one is the one with the clock in it?
But I love the vibe.
Yeah.
Big fan of his dreamy vibe. That's I want to.
I think I have one of his scores on vinyl because I like
cool.
it so much.
Do you have
so.
Any of the previous Blu-rays? Because all of these did
nope.
come out on
I don't
Blu-ray,
own
so.
Any of the Jean Rollins on Blu-rays and DVDs. There was, you know what? It was just too many.
Yeah.
And they were coming out and... I think Jean Rollin has that problem is that I go, have I seen? I don't know. I'd have to check. Never mind. So.
Yeah, I think people get, because I remember even when we were getting those Blu-rays in from Kino, they weren't flying
indicator.
Out of here.
Check the description of this podcast. You can send us stuff.
Send
we'll
us
review
stuff.
Them. Yeah.
Send
Instead
us stuff.
Of these vague kind of
I know.
Like,
I emailed them, but I have
no response.
Back.
Update.
We'll see.
There's still only one,
email.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a
Just
recent
one.
Very happy to receive them, but. It sounds like we're only getting the discs,
which is you know
that's not what I know.
I know you're not happy.
I won't
that.
Sell them either. Like I think that most people who receive them, they just flip them right away.
Well, that's the thing, right?
Yeah.
I would never do that. I would never do that.
What is the moratorium
yeah,
on selling?
That's what I'm saying officially on the podcast. I would never do
because
that
because they're supposed to. You get holes in the back of the
DVDs.
Yeah,
but
the
you
people
should.
You sell them to don't care.
I don't think.
No,
I don't know if they do that though anymore because
oh,
I have gotten a few. Press copies of things.
They do.
Here
they
and there,
do because I saw that
never had
Visual Vengeance was writing about.
Okay.
Visual Vengeance never got any review copies of any of your upcoming
come
releases.
Come on, come on.
So next up, we have New Fist of Fury. I put this on the list just to.
Yeah. What is
just
this?
To laugh.
You didn't buy this.
No, this is Jackie Chan's debut feature film in a starring role,
kind of, but not
directed
really.
By Lo Wei. Bad movie. Only 88 films version.
Okay.
Like, do you want to see a Jackie Chan straight face trying to do Bruce Lee? There's some like novelty value there, which is why I own the 88 Films Blu-ray.
Yep.
This is like new 2K restorations. I don't care. It's a bad movie. Like,
well, speaking of things that aren't selling well anymore, these Aero martial arts movies.
Oh,
are
it just completely tankered.
Just
you know what I?
Off.
You know what did it?
I mean,
box sets.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Especially like the Jackie Chan stuff recently has just not been.
That's fascinating.
But just from them, you know, like
I think. Remember what I said? A lot of people own the UK versions, and they're just going through the catalog again. And that's what they're kind of bouncing off of.
Yeah, there's definitely been a few that have underperformed lately.
All right. These aren't good. People don't like.
I know, right? See, this but is they mix- put this- like they make it seem like it's good.
Yeah,
right?
This is a mixture of a bad movie that I don't like. Okay. It has interesting kind of historical value.
Yep.
Would not recommend to someone. Also, has already come out. So like any of the diehards would already have it.
Right?
But I guess this is the third point. People have bought so many of these at this point that they haven't watched. They cannot keep going. And I think it doesn't have the allure of like a horror film where you're like, oh, I'll get a horror film.
Yeah. There's fatigue.
They do say limited edition, but they're not numbered. So I guess people just ignore it.
But everything from Arrow says limited edition.
But it's not
I think
really.
People are wise to that. Mm-hmm. Only rarely, like with that Enter the Video Store set or something, is something from Arrow actually
so,
limited
a limited edition.
Edition
Speaking of Arrow, they're like, all right, Jackie's not doing well. What can we get to really fill our coffers?
The last house on the left.
I love that Wes Anderson, Sean Cunningham
Wes
film.
Anderson.
Oh, yeah.
Wes Anderson's last house on the
Wes
left.
Wes Craven. Are you going to tell me, Mark, that you have an affinity for the remake directed by Denis Iliadis?
Iliadis. You're goddamn right I do.
Oh, no.
I saw this in theaters on opening night. And I quite liked it, actually. Keep in mind.
What about the second one, which
you
also directed?
I was probably like 19 when this came out. 20. No, I was like, 20, 21 when this came out. I like this. I don't know. Maybe.
People don't like it.
To be completely honest, I'm not a crazy fan of the original Last House on the Left. I like it. It's
fine. I mean, am I putting it for a spin? No.
No.
I can appreciate it.
Well, just. I love Wes Craven, but the original Last House and even the original Hills Have Eyes don't do a ton for me. I think they're good, but I don't really revisit them. So when the remakes of both of those came out, I was kind of like, yeah, I'm into both of these. I don't know. This just had like a style to it that I really dug
at
the time.
Wait, do you like the sequel as well? That one is hated.
Of which one?
This one, Last House on the Left.
There's a sequel to
Last House on the Left. Oh, maybe I'm confusing
with
I Spit on Your Grave.
Oh, yeah. The I Spit on Your Grave remakes.
Yes.
Those are terrible.
Okay, maybe
I mean, I haven't
that.
Seen, I've only seen the first remake, which was
this
abysmal.
This cover is so generic of like other Arrow covers.
I know, right? I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you could kind of just buy this and maybe just think it's the original if you weren't looking too closely.
It
does say a Denis Iliadis.
I
want to
say Denis. I don't think he's French.
But this was that interesting period, too, when Wes Craven was getting these European directors to come over and remake his films, like with Alexander Aja with The Hills Have Eyes, and Denis Iliadis is a Greek director, I believe, who did some cool indie stuff.
Sorry, I'm laughing at the back of this box. It says, a new script by Carl Ellsworth. We all love him from Red Eye, Disturbia.
No.
And Stephen King described this movie as the best horror movie of the new century.
Stephen King
has the worst
terrible
taste
in movies. Love him as a writer.
Such bad taste in movies.
But you know what? I got a soft spot for this movie, which is weird to say because it's like a grimy rape revenge movie. I remember the rape scene in question being really
grimy,
difficult to watch, but not necessarily in an offensive, exploitative way. Yeah. I thought he did a fairly good job with it.
What else did he direct?
He just directed some Greek films before this.
Okay.
And I
don't
know what he's done since. He did that movie Plus One, which was kind of like a teen sci-fi horror film.
Oh, we talked about it.
I think we talked about
it.
I don't know what he's done since then, though.
It
I know
feels
he's been
like
around, though.
He's like a Bruce, you know, Dylan kind of guy.
This guy. He's got some style, though. I hope not.
That's what it says. Energetically directed at the top.
I really liked this at the time. But yeah, I mean, take that with a grain of salt. I don't know if this would hold up anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Arrow's just, you know, putting out whatever
like,
they
this
can
is
put.
Whatever they can put out.
Because the thing, this already came out in a Blu-ray with a bunch of special features. Like, I don't know what's different about this.
You get it in 4K.
All
right, so next up, Arrow's like writing our name down to send us preview copies. And like, what the hell?
No, definitely buy this. Definitely.
Next up, you know what? I said that New Fist of Fury was 88 films. It is not. It's an Arrow video release.
Oh, did we say? Well, but it used.
I think it was an 88 films release in the UK.
Sorry, I didn't catch that. Yeah, we're just talking Arrow here. No 88 films.
This is so funny that, like, they're like, what can we put out? New Fist of Fury, I guess? Like,
yeah, sure.
The Jackie pool is so small at this point.
Yeah.
Next up, we have Criterion, Dry Long So.
And it's this week's
Blind Bye
Bye. We're here. Bit of a cheat, though, since I did see this
3 months ago.
I
looked at your letterbox.
Because it was touring theatrically a little bit.
Now, who at Criterion is getting all of these like African-American films, rediscovering them, putting them out? Because it ain't Criterion, I don't feel.
Yeah,
or
well,
it's like someone or an organization.
The cynic in me does think that they did take a lot of flack for not having a lot of directors of color or female directors of color. Yeah. And I think they're making more of an effort these days, which I think is great because you're getting a lot of underseen movies like this one, which I've been
watching. Watermelon Woman.
Watermelon Woman. But this one in particular, at least Watermelon Woman had a DVD around. Yeah. This one premiered, I think it's Sundance or some festivals in the late 90s. Totally disappeared after that. Director's name is Colleen Smith, and she hasn't made another feature since.
She made a lot of shorts.
She went into the art
world. All of these filmmakers, too, they're all teachers. Like, I know. You cannot escape.
I read an interview with her recently when this was going around again, and she's a teacher. She's in more of the art world now. She actually doesn't really do filmmaking anymore. She's more interested in art, which you can kind of tell because this movie is about art and photography as well. So I think that was... filmmaking was just kind of one of many artistic passions.
But, you know, if someone had given her more opportunities, then maybe she would have made more
films. Well, yeah, I think she talked about the fact that just no opportunities arose.
Like, we talked about Chameleon Street as well, which is a similar situation, even though that one even got more attention than this one.
We talked about Alma's Rainbow recently, which was another similar situation. I mean, Julie Dash, you can point to, is another an African-American filmmaker who just kind of didn't get the due.
What is
she
the
deserved?
Plot of Dry Long Summer? How do you sell it to someone?
It's interesting because it seems like almost maybe like an autobiographical thing where you have a young...
I think it is. Isn't it? Because there's like a special thing.
Yeah, a young art student, photography student who basically wants to do a project documenting the black men in her neighborhood because she believes they're going extinct because of obviously police violence in LA, in the LA area at that point. And I think this is Oakland, actually. In Oakland. And it's a really charming little movie. But then she starts up a friendship with another woman who is just getting out of an abuse or dealing with an abusive relationship. And they have a really nice relationship, a friendship that continues.
And there's also like a really... slasher film in the background that's happening.
Yeah, well, there's sort of like maybe a serial killer thing going on in the background.
I mean, there is.
But there is. Yeah. But I wouldn't sell it on that.
I've seen people like a slow motion horror film. I'm like, no, don't sell it.
I'm not sure I would sell it like
that.
Because it's kind of like, despite like those kind of things in it, I do find it like a sweet and charming and hopeful.
I think
kind
that
of
where
movie,
it ends,
despite
it ends in like a very positive place as well.
It's
that it's not like suffer.
Well, it's a focus on like community organizing and stuff, and basically she kind of rallies the community together through her art project, which she sets up in like an abandoned lot.
I kept waiting for there to be a twist of like, oh, this person that was helpful is not.
I know. Or... Yeah. I kind of thought that because I kept reading when I was selling it as like there was more of maybe a thriller element, but there's not really. But I don't need that.
No, it's just about mostly two women trying to deal with like their lives, what they want to do, you know, present themselves in a society to get the, positive reactions or just any kind of not negative reaction. I think this is great. I think it's full of texture and it's fun.
It looks
funny.
Great
performances. I don't know if it was shot on 16mm. It's got that vibe. It's very grainy. Maybe it was on 35.
It seems like 16mm, but you never know. It looks clean. It really nicely cleaned up because I know there were copies of this floating around on YouTube from like bad VHS rips.
Did it probably
rips,
never get
I
an
guess.
Official release or
never
something?
Never had
like
an official release that I know of. Maybe a VHS tape at one point. Never on DVD, but this new restoration is sparkling. It looks really great.
And I'm glad
that really
Criterion put it out on Blu-ray with a bunch of her short films and a new conversation between the director and film scholar Michael B. Gillespie.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff on here. And, you know, like a lot of these Criterion's films of underrepresented filmmakers, it's just not selling very well, which is really unfortunate because this is a movie that's like ripe for rediscovery. It's just awesome. It's a really awesome little film. And I just feel like people maybe just don't know about it.
Did this one come to the Criterion Channel? I feel like it did.
Not
or some
sure.
streaming.
Sure. Or they might have been holding it back because they did a fairly long theatrical tour with it, which is where I saw it initially. So I don't know if it was on the Criterion Channel. I think it is now, though.
Okay.
But...
So maybe that dissuades people from picking
it
up.
Yeah.
It's weird when they do that. We talked about like sometimes it takes a while, but it's like they should release it physical media.
Yeah.
And wait like
they
a
usually
window,
hold off. Yeah.
And then you put it on.
So
but
I'm not sure.
I understand
if that's
for
the
littler films that are not well known, they try to like get a buzz. But I think that people go, man, I don't need it on Blu-ray and physical. I'll watch it sometime online, and they just never do.
It can backfire. And the problem is they're all priced the same as, like, their big editions of, like,
they should make them cheaper
because
they did not pay this much for this.
They should, Well, with their new Janus Contemporaries line, you know, the new stuff they're putting out, those are at cheaper price points. So you'd think they maybe would lower the price for something like this. You know, there was one time when Criterion was the only boutique label in the game and you get it, but like $41.95 for a Blu-ray.
Yeah,
a small
they
film,
they can't quite
when like Kino Lorber
that.
Is putting out like similar stuff for like half the price.
Or even like is it Cinema Guild or
well, they're pretty expensive.
Expensive, which is the one. There's some other companies that have done like African American filmmakers, yeah.
and
they're not
and they're
as expensive
way cheaper.
As that.
So I think it's just this is the price point for Criterion's.
And they're just
I think they just are rigid on it. It's like you gotta change it, right?
Yeah.
Like
even
not...
if like the ones that people want are more expensive, and they're yeah. like, listen, licensing fees are more.
Yeah, I get. You know, they push the 4K prices up for just a Blu-ray of a film like this. I mean, to ask people to pay $42.
How do you
maybe
feel that Steven Spielberg once said that like he thinks that like cinema as like the experience will change where like bigger movies are more expensive and smaller ones are cheaper? Is that dangerous?
I don't know. I mean. Yeah, I could,
or would
I
that encourage
that
to see cheaper movies?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, that's the thing.
Or smaller
movies,
I mean.
I'm not necessarily against that. If it encourages people to see movies they might not otherwise because the price is lower. Mm-hmm. But you also never know if that's going to actually happen.
Yeah, or it'll just erase those movies.
That's
and
the
everyone
thing. People
will
might just
be
like, oh, well, I don't need to see that. It's so hard to get people to see things they're not already like aware of
yeah.
Especially a small indie movie like this from like the late 90s. That's like
so, of course,
such a specific
our
kind
buy
of
buy recommendations.
Hell yeah. This is a major. I mean, I'd already kind of
seen it.
So, yeah, this is a buy. You know, we always ask, would you buy this? But that doesn't make sense because... The purpose of a blind buy
is that you don't know.
So we should rephrase it. Are you happy with your blind buy?
Oh, there you go. Are you happy with your blind buy?
I thought about that this week.
Yes, did someone come up to you? They're like,
no, I just thought about it. I'm like, we always say, you know, would you blind buy this? But that doesn't really, that kind of defeats the purpose of a blind buy. So yes, I'm happy with our blind buy, even though we didn't actually buy this copy, but we're pretending like we did.
Listen, it's a video store. They get open, they get put on the shelf. We
exactly.
can watch them
you know,
way,
we're, so. We're doing the best we can here,
me
guys.
Me and Mark watch every movie
we're doing
together.
The best, we're doing the best
on
we can.
The couch. In the screening room of Bay Street Video.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, when's the screening room opening out of the public?
Yeah,
right?
You know, any day now, any day
there's,
now.
There's no such thing. Just to be clear, there's no screening room.
I would love...
You could easily turn some of these offices into screening
rooms.
You could.
That,
like, sit empty here.
I know. I that would be my dream to start something like that.
Like at Eyesore, the way they have a screening
room exactly.
In the back?
I like that.
That brings a lot of people in, too.
Well, I think that's kind of the way you need to run, like, a video store
because,
these
Vidiots does it that way,
exactly.
too.
Exactly. You got to have it, like, an event space with a store, retail store.
Unless, of course, the person who owns the building also manages the video store, in which case...
Yeah,
we don't really need to do that.
Maybe, I'll bring it up with them. I'll bring it up. It's not going to happen.
No. Next up, we got Wichita. This one, I'm bringing it up. I actually haven't seen this one. I started watching it. I was like, I'm going to watch it for this podcast. Didn't have time to.
the story of our life.
That I have, it doesn't look good, which is a bummer, but it's on Blu-ray now from Warner Archives, and I assume a new scan. Oh, it doesn't say, so maybe not.
I don't know.
And Wichita, Jacques Tourneur, love the guy. He's awesome. Widescreen, color Western. The best. So, yeah, I would recommend people check it out. And the color is like early Technicolor, so it looks like a little weird.
Okay.
And Tourneur is like a stylist, so like there'll be outdoor scenes where it's like clearly like a backdrop behind them and just like a little bit of desert. Love that stuff.
Okay.
I wish I could have finished it because it's a Joel McCrea Western, and it's less than 90. It's 81 minutes.
Wow. Just
so maybe I'll go home
and
finish
it. In and out. In and out.
Next up, I was zooming through these because I know me and Mark can talk about this for a while. John Travolta in Staying Alive.
Oh, I could talk about this all day long. I love Staying Alive.
Now, I think
big
I read
fan.
They reached out and said, Sly Stallone, the director of this film,
yeah.
will you do some special features? And he said, no, thank
did
you.
They really?
Yeah,
and
I would
he wouldn't
love
do it?
Like a sit-down interview with Sly. Doesn't even have to watch the movie. I understand that like they feel uncomfortable. They don't want to watch your old work. You
is
don't need to
he,
do
is he embarrassed about this movie or something?
I think absolutely he is.
He
is,
yeah. Even though I feel like it's been reclaimed a little bit.
I
you
believe
know? I know
this
it's a bit
film
like...
is the only one he directed that he doesn't star in.
Yeah, well, he pops up for 2 seconds in a cameo.
I don't remember if he
was. There's a great scene where John Travolta as Tony Manero walking down the street, and he bumps into Sly. And
dressed
they
as
have
Rocky?
Just
so it's like
Sylvester
The Rock
Stallone.
And Arnie in the beginning of the rundown?
Well, it's interesting because in Saturday Night Fever, he's got the Rocky poster on his wall, right? So there's this moment where they like lock eyes, and there's this like moment of recognition. It's like, great meta moment.
You
great
know
meta moment.
That James Cameron's script for Rocky 2, Rambo 2, was supposed to be Sly and Stallone. No, Sly and Travolta teaming up.
Interesting. Well, I was reading after, because I love this movie, so I'm like, I'm going to rewatch this 4K Blu-ray and check it out, and it looks great.
Not in 4K.
Not in 4K. Well, I watched the Blu-ray. The Blu-ray transfer looks great because it's never been on Blu-ray before.
Oh,
either.
I didn't know that.
Just not even a regular Blu-ray.
Because we probably watched a standard definition edition. I don't know if you were there when Brendan Ross put it on.
I was there. Yeah. I stayed for that because I love it.
Oh,
I was
like, we were all like, yeah!
Yeah, I know. It was great.
I mean, I love Staying Alive,
that
too.
That was like
the cool.
best. Yeah, it's so much fun.
What's fun about Staying Alive is that John Travolta is such a huge dick in this movie.
Oh,
he's the worst
in this movie. But he's a dick in the first movie.
Wait, didn't
too,
you say
right?
that it's kind of like Showgirls, the plot of this film?
Oh, somebody commented on okay. my, which I do, you know, you can kind of see that. Showgirls for Men, I think.
Yes.
Is what it,
where it's like John Travolta wants to be a dancer and he's willing to do anything.
Exactly.
To get there.
Well, it's funny, like I really love Saturday Night Fever. It's one of my favorites.
Is
and,
it?
And yeah, I really I really dig it. I'm a big Tony.
Siskel love the
Tony.
Of the duo
I know.
Here.
I wish I could have the suit like Siskel did. And I agree, this does not have any of the grit or authenticity of the original Saturday Night Fever,
but
it's its own thing. It's its own thing, you know? And I love that he's just like, he's totally ripped. He's like ready for Broadway. He's sweaty. He's good to go.
This ends with.
Because it's a totally different style of dancing than in the first one. In the first one, he's just like.
Disco dancing.
Disco dancing, which isn't much. Here he's like leaping around. Like he trained for this.
So if people don't know, this movie is about John Travolta wanting to get on Broadway as a dancer.
Yeah.
And the film climaxes with like a 30-minute dance.
Oh my
sequence.
God. Of Satan's Alley, I think
Satan's
is the
Alley
play.
Is what it's called?
Yeah, Satan's
is
Alley.
Is it a takeoff of Paradise Alley, the Sly Stallone
maybe,
film directed
who knows?
This?
But I'm watching the show again. I'm like, wow, do these kind of Broadway dance shows exist? Like,
well, you know what? If they did, we could not afford them. To see
I'd
them.
Love to go. I yes. would love to go.
You know, we have our little Broadway in Toronto, Canada.
Yep.
King Street. Does it have a name?
It's the Entertainment District.
That's all the Entertainment District.
Yeah, no, it's just called
and
King
all those
Street.
All those like theater have turned into they're showing tip
look,
movies
no,
now.
Nobody's confusing King Street in Toronto with Broadway.
No, nobody is.
As and much then, as they're trying. As
well,
much as
we're here
trying.
At Midnight Madness in these uncomfortable seats.
Yeah,
no good eye lines.
Jesus. Yeah.
Bring us back to the antiseptic Ryerson.
Yeah, that's where it should be. But
isn't it funny that Ryerson is sitting empty this like thousand
seat? Yeah, like
seat,
they don't do anything with that anymore.
And they just don't do anything.
I feel
there.
Sad for the Ryerson Theater.
But they made that choice, I think.
They
of
did.
Them being like, it's too much trouble to have these
well,
people.
Well, also, they just want. I think it's just convenient to move everything in the
I do
same
like,
because
you're not allowed to eat food in the Ryerson. That,
that's true. That's
at,
true.
The Winter Garden, they, you get those like little salty things of popcorn.
I mean, I've snuck food into the Ryerson many, many
you know
a
what?
Time
it's
before.
Your fault we
I'm
can't
sorry.
Do it
I'm,
anymore.
So, I'm very clean. I didn't drop it anywhere.
You're just eating a sloppy
well,
Joe
sometimes you got
to
line up for stuff like an hour in advance, you know?
So,
anyways, back to
Staying Alive,
though. Great movie. Shocked it's never been on Blu-ray at all before. So this new transfer looks great. And you're right, John Travolta, even more of a dick in this one than the first one. But the thing I like about it is he gets called out constantly by everybody.
I like the climactic moment of John Travolta screaming at his partner to be like, jump! And the movie's like, will she make it?
Yeah, even though after he pushes her aside and does his own solo by himself. That actress, too, by the way, plays a similar role in Aspen Extreme, which is a favorite of the Bay Street Video Podcast.
I haven't mentioned Aspen Extreme in ages.
I know. She
is
plays...
that still in your Twitter bio?
I think so.
Number one
I think
Aspen
there,
Extreme
yeah.
fan.
No, nobody mentions Aspen Extreme except for Mike Wood and myself.
Mike Wood.
But yeah, high recommendation for Staying Alive on 4K. Love it.
Next up, we have a huge figure in the No Wave film movement. Beth B is getting a 2-disc set from Kino Classics. You know, I want to say short film. They are. There's also some features here. Breathe In, Breathe Out. And Visiting Desires cracked that 60-minute mark.
Yeah, it's mostly... She did do features, which Kino is actually putting out in a month or so.
Which ones are hers?
She did Two Small Bodies and Salvation, which is a movie with actually Stephen McCaddy and Viggo Mortensen.
Stephen McCaddy, Canada's own.
Yeah.
Wait, is Viggo Mortensen Canadian?
No, he's Australian,
oh,
I think.
Oh, okay.
Anyways, Beth B., yeah, huge part of the No Wave movement. That also She also kind of influenced the Cinema of Transgression movement. She was more known at first because she directed movies with her husband, Scott B. They did like B movies together is what they were called. And, they did some really good stuff like Black Box, G-Man, stuff like that. Like huge underground classics at the time and really kicked off that no wave and cinema transgression moment, movement. And then in the late 80s, her and Scott B broke apart, were doing their own thing. She did some features, but then she got more into that kind of like experimental video art realm. And that's what this set is. It's a little, I wish Kino's getting big into the Beth B game because they are putting out her other features.
It's weird they put this out first. This
but
seems
I
like the last
I know,
because
I would love, I'd love a collection of the Beth B and Scott B movies too, which aren't available right now, as far as I know. Because
did they have an acrimonious split?
I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe
they probably
maybe,
own the rights
maybe
their
it's
stuff.
A rights thing, yeah. But I think they've been touring
together.
Theatrically, or I think they've been touring her earlier stuff theatrically. So I think a set of those is coming out at some point. And those are her more like landmark sort of stuff, yeah, that people would know. So I'd like to see those. This is really fascinating, though. I'm a big fan of Beth B, and I've just anything they put out by her is really cool, especially since you don't get much experimental video art stuff on Blu-ray. So yeah, kudos to Kino for putting these out. Not really any special features.
Yeah, that's a bummer. There's Give an me inter- some con. There's an interview
yeah,
with her.
There's an interview with her, but that's it.
Also, Viggo Mortensen, born in America. No need for
he?
Corrections.
I don't
ever.
Know why I thought he was
never
Australian.
Never correct us. We don't yeah. care. Mark never sees
maybe
it, but I do.
I have no idea why I thought he was Australian. Yeah.
Good day, mate. Or maybe New Zealand?
New Zealand? Because he was in Lord of the Rings. Maybe, maybe it's the...
Usually if
Hidalgo, is that
if an
Australian
actor works
somewhere?
A lot with a, like... a Canadian director. I always assume they're Canadian because you get credits
yeah.
that way.
Well, I know early in his career he worked with Canadian directors, European directors, yeah. so I'm American directors.
Hey,
so
we're all excited, right? A new Viggo Mortensen directed film is coming to what was
yeah,
the last one he directed?
I don't care about that. Has he directed before?
Yes.
Oh yeah, one. He did that.
Did he do a Western?
No, the new one is the Western. Right?
Yes. What was the one before
Didn't he
that?
Do a drama? He did a drama. That
probably
I'm,
boring.
He did a boring looking drama.
All right. So next up we have Hustle and Flow with the completely unproblematic Terrence Howard stuff.
Yeah. Terrence Howard's not a great guy.
And
but...
Craig Brewer, a guy who, boy, he, you know what? He tried
what
early on
him?
To do his thing.
Yeah.
Well, he just became a studio guy. He became
did.
Eddie Murphy's boy.
True. I love this movie, though. Mm-hmm. Big Hustle and Flow fan. It's just, I mean, it's that classic inspirational rags to riches music. Yeah, I know. Justin's pointing at the price tag, which is a whopping $66.95.
Oh, it's $66? I thought it was $60.95.
For, well, it's one of those Paramount Presents 4K,
you
got to
import them.
So I got to import them. But you know what? This is the kind of movie that, for the sound alone, you probably want that new soundtrack.
Nice try, man.
No, I'm trying to sell it. I'm trying to sell it.
I have this on DVD that I got from Roger
Video.
I do,
too. I've never upgraded my DVD, which actually looks pretty good.
Because
I think, I want to say you shot it on 16mm, but that might not be true.
And Craig Brewer. Oh, yeah, he did Dolomite Is My Name. I like
yeah,
Dolomite Is
My
Name.
That was fun. Nothing he's done since this.
What about Black Snake Moan?
I didn't really like that.
Okay.
Yeah, that was kind of underwhelming. Really excited for that at the time because I love this so much, but... yeah, it was okay.
So this is a story of Terrence Howard becomes a rap star.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's the typical kind of, you know, rise to stardom.
Yeah, not even really superstardom.
No,
right?
Yeah, because he ends up in jail. But, you know, he ends up in jail, but then the track gets more notoriety because of that. I mean, obviously, this is probably best known for winning an Oscar for 3-6 Mafia.
Oh, it did?
Yeah, for their for It's Hard
Out. Perform on
It's Hard Out Here for Pimp. I think they did. I mean, the songs in this are great.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got a great beat. And you know, the cast is all fire. I mean, speaking of problematic people, Anthony Anderson is also in this.
Is Anthony Anderson problematic? I didn't hear about that.
Oh, yeah. He's,
oh, no.
Check his Wikipedia controversy
like
section.
Controversy section?
He's got some sexual assault charges.
Oh, no. I love Blackish.
DJ Qualls, our man.
I
DJ
mean, I
Qualls
love DJ
is
Qualls,
in this.
Yeah.
He's really funny in this, too. I really like him.
I haven't watched it since probably the year after it came
so
out.
So good. I've seen this so many times. And Taraji P. Henson, of course, excellent in this. Taryn Manning's really good in this. And even Ludacris in his small role is really fun.
What? He doesn't even have a controversies page.
Oh, does he not?
Oh, it's in personal life and then rape and sexual assault allegations.
There you go. So yeah, he's not so good.
On the set of Hustle and Flow.
Was it? I didn't even know that.
Of a 25-year-old extra in his trailer. Ugh.
Yeah.
How did I never hear about that?
Yeah, it's been...
And in 2018, he was revealed that he was being investigated again for another sexual assault.
Well, when he was blowing up again because of Blackish.
And then he was sued in 2004.
I know. And I always loved him as a kid, you know, from Scary Movie 3. So he was like, I thought he was so funny. And then it's disappointing hearing
Wow, that they really swept that under the rug when he did Blackish.
Well, it kind of came out again. When he started getting big again with Blackish, that's when I started hearing about it again. Mm. I'd heard about it before, but...
Has Anthony Anderson gone into like DTV, like co-starring with Mel Gibson?
Not yet, I'm aware of.
Yeah.
So.
All right.
Anyways,
let's
all that to
there.
Say though,
Hustle and Flow,
Hustle
great
and Flow.
Movie.
It's great. It's a great movie.
Even though
it's
we said so negatives good. About almost everyone
Everything.
Except for the.
You know what? It's fine.
Squeaky clean DJ Qualls.
You know he's fine. Yeah. What could DJ Qualls possibly do?
Let me look at his Wikipedia. Oh, controversy. No.
I don't want to know anything bad about DJ Qualls. He's our friend.
All right. So next up, he's not a friend. He's not. We have Brightwood. Now, this is a film I know that you're a fan of, Mark.
Yeah, I thought this was fairly interesting. You know, we didn't have much new stuff to talk about this week or at all, really. So I want to highlight a small little indie film which came across my radar because it's kind of one of those low-budge
time travel movie
kind of movies. So
I was gonna watch it, and I looked at your review, and I went, and you're like, even though you know where it's going, I was like, no.
So yeah, I will say this: if you've seen like
Time Crimes,
Primer, or Time, especially Time Crimes,
it's the same closed loop thing.
It's very similar.
You know which one I really liked,
but it's more. I'll say this: it's more nightmarish though.
Yeah,
a little bit.
Is the one, I don't know if you saw this one, where it was like, you take a photograph across like the way and you can see like a day into the future.
Well, that's interesting.
But what happens is that like, it's like a closed loop. So basically what you're playing is like how you'll get there.
Right.
And it turns into like murder and stuff like that.
That's
so
interesting.
Man,
I've never heard of that.
I'm gonna look it up now. Well, so Brightwood, where'd you see it?
I just got a screener of it when it was playing, I think, at some festivals and theatrically, and I just was intrigued by the premise. So the premise is basically a couple who are out for like a jog around the lake, like next to in the woods next to their house. They're clearly having problems. They're fighting. They had a big fight. They're like on the verge of breaking up. So they're kind of like arguing as they're going for this jog, and then they start to see this like hooded figure around. They're like, oh, that guy's kind of weird. And then it turns into this thing where they keep jogging around and they're like, okay, we're gonna leave now, and they can't figure out how to get back to the road. And every way they go,
so
they,
it's like a dead end, if you will.
Yeah, like every way they go, they just end up back at the same place. And then there's certain spooky things happen. Then they start to realize, oh, like there's doubles of us out there, and the female lead has like a pair of headphones in, like earbuds in the whole time. And they start to find like pileups of all these earbuds. So it's
like a triangle
it becomes
situation.
Becomes this thing where they're like, oh my God, how many versions of us are, like, how many times have we done this? How many versions? So, like I said, like Justin mentioned, you'll probably figure out where this is going around the halfway mark.
Yes.
And it kind of just goes there. But I appreciate its commitment to staying bleak and everything. It definitely doesn't kind of pull any punches and have some like weird, you know, happy ending or something.
Nah.
It really goes
the
full...
But that's the opposite,
it goes
like you said.
It goes the full nine yards with its premise.
The bleak ending is the obvious ending for these.
I know, I just like when it commits to its premise
and I don't like it
way.
When it's like, oh, I got it. And you're like, there's an hour left of this goddamn movie.
Well, the
movie.
Issue is, and it's on here too, this is actually adapted from the guy's short film called The Pond, which was 17 minutes. And I feel it definitely has that energy where it's like, you could tell this was a short film that has now been expanded
to a
feature.
Who is this company Cinephobia releasing?
Yeah, they're a relatively new company that is under, I think Kino has their distribution rights. Mm. We get them through the same sort of supplier as Kino stuff. They've just started putting out, again, it's another one of these companies that just starts putting out like really small indie genre stuff. Mostly genre stuff, although they've put out a bunch of LGBTQ interest stuff that you might not hear about otherwise. Mm-hmm. Like, you look at the cover of this, it's played at, like, Panic Fest, Popcorn Fright Film Fest.
Don't put those on.
Another Hole in the Head.
Yeah, don't do that.
You're not even getting, like, a Fantasia or, like, a Fright Fest on here.
Oh, wait, did I play Another Hole in the Head? I feel like I did with one of my Great Film Festival.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, Come on. So, there you go. But, yeah, Brightwood... It's definitely not the kind of thing that I would say rush out and go see, but I'm always a sucker for these kind of movies, which clearly are like made by a few people like around their environment.
Well, I'm going to recommend Time Lapse from 2014.
I have seen that. Yeah. I have seen that.
It's I only knew it because it co-starred an actor that was in The Flash, Daniel Pennebaker.
She's
the documentarian.
2009, Friday the 13th.
Friday the 13th,
yep.
And maybe. And I bought this DVD at the dollar store back when they used to have good dollar store DVDs.
I think we have that rental still. I don't think we got
fun
rid
movie.
Of that.
Yeah. I mean, I would I give it a hard recommendation? No.
Yeah, I thought it was okay at the time.
Yeah, I like Primer when it comes to time travel
Primer's
movies.
Primer's great, yeah.
I really
like
The Infinite Man or The Finite Man. Finite Man.
Yes,
that's
that
a really
too.
Fun
that
one,
one's
too.
Okay. Yeah, if you like those kind of things, I would say this is kind of up your alley, although it's not the most original version of it. I just thought it was well done.
All right, so that's it for this week's episode of the Bay Street Video Podcast. My name is Justin Clue.
And I'm Mark Hansen.
Bye-bye.
And keep on renting.
Diddy-o, it's what you wanna watch. Surprise movies.
These movies and many more are available at your local video
surprise
store.
Surprise movies, yeah.
Because Mark recently discovered a Sidney J. Lumet film that he's like, however, I never heard of it.
Sidney J. Fury film.
Sidney J. Fury.
Yeah. I was in BM.
Sidney J. Lumet. I don't know if the J and
that
Lumet.
Would be, yeah, I know, right. It should combine forces. Yeah. Yeah, I was in BMV, which is Toronto's best used
people may say,
destination.
Mark, why do you go to used stores? You work in a video store.
But you know what?
The you can find the good
the
stuff.
The used stores are where you find the good out-of-print stuff
and the thing
that
is,
nobody has any value for.
You, the store probably had this movie at one point.
Probably, although
and you
I've never
working
heard
at
of
that
this
point,
before.
Yeah.
There
what
is
it called?
A Sidney J. Fury movie. So it on the DVD is called Hide and Seek, which is a generic
so
title.
You pick this up.
But
what makes
on
you,
IMDb,
oh, I know. Vincent Gallo, yeah, Gallo
yeah.
right?
Yeah. On IMDb, it's called something completely different, like Code something or Code... I don't know. It's, but yeah, this is a late 90s DTV thriller starring Vincent Gallo.
So you're like, sold.
Jennifer Tilly, who we were just yeah. talking about, as well as like Bruce Greenwood and somebody.
So this is a
oh,
Canadian
Daryl,
film.
Daryl Hamm. Yeah.
Bruce Greenwood is Canadian, yep.
So I looked it up. I'm like, is this Canadian? It is 100% Canadian, directed by Sidney J. Fury. Never heard of it. It's like a thriller about a couple that breaks down, I think,
yeah.
in the
so this is like Mark
desert. And apparently,
made.
Yeah, Vincent Gallo and Jennifer Tilly are like a psycho couple. So I think
oh,
it has like a California
yeah.
sort of vibe.
So what'd you think of the movie?
I haven't seen it. I haven't watched it yet.
I could have sworn I saw a review by you.
No, I just picked it up like a few days ago.
That just goes to show Mark is still on the hunt. For the
I'm
stuff that you know has no value.
You know, I was at a TIFF press screening, and there was one like a BMV right next to it. So I'm like, I'm going to kill some time. I'm just going to go in here. I haven't been in a
Oh, Young and Dundas, yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to look through, and I found that. So
you know, there's always treasures to be
bucks,
found.
$6. Out of print DVD.
Now, did you buy it before you knew Sidney J. Fury directed it?
Well, it said right on the back.
Oh, okay. So you just checked, and you're like,
well,
oh, my God.
I was immediately, I saw Vincent Gallo on the cover. I'm like, a Vincent Gallo movie I've never heard of. What?
The man I look up to and model my life on.
And Jennifer Tilly. And I love Jennifer Tilly, too. Yeah. I'm like, what the hell? Look at the back. Sidney J. Fury. This must be Canadian. Look it up on IMDb. Yep,
Canadian. 100%
Canadian. What else do I need to know?